This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. When he was governor of Texas, George W. Bush described the life and death decision on clemency as the most agonizing part of being governor. Last Friday, Kenneth Lee Boyd became the 1,000th prisoner to be put to death since the Supreme Court reinstated capital punishment in 1976. A jury in North Carolina found him guilty of the 1988 murder of his estranged wife and father-in-law. Earlier last week, Virginia Governor Mark Warner commuted the death sentence of Robin Lovett to life without parole. That marks the 230th time a convicted killer has been granted clemency in the modern era of the death penalty. The spotlight turns now to California, where Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger considers the fate of Stanley Tukey Williams, a founding member of a notorious Los Angeles street gang who's scheduled for execution a week from today for the murder of four people in 1979. In prison, Williams redeemed himself, his supporters say, in campaigns against drugs and crime and gangs. In this hour, we'll explore how governors make their clemency decisions. What process do they follow? What are the legal and moral considerations? Do political consequences come into play? We'll talk with two former governors who faced this godlike decision. And we welcome your phone calls. What factors should governors consider on clemency? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Later in the hour, we'll follow up on an earlier program we did on Wikipedia, the free, user-written online encyclopedia, which instituted new controls after a biography falsely described its subject as a possible participant in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. But first, governors and clemency, and we begin in California with the Tukey Williams case. Andy Farrillo, a reporter for the Sacramento Bee, joins us from the Sacramento Bureau of our member station in San Francisco, KQED. Nice to have you on the program.
My pleasure, Neil.
And let me begin by asking, what's the process in this case? Governor Schwarzenegger, I know, has asked for some hearings.
Well, he's going to have a private hearing on Thursday with attorneys from the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office and also defense attorneys for Stanley Williams. That hearing probably will take an hour. It's highly unlikely that he'll make his decision on Thursday. But it shouldn't be too long after that that he will make a decision, and that the execution is scheduled for 12:01 on a.m. next Tuesday.
And is Governor Schwarzenegger at this point the last court of appeal? Or is there any other process open to the Williams people?
Well, he would be the last process for Mr. Williams right now. However, you never know if a new issue might be brought up in the federal courts. Mm-hmm. But his state appeals have run out, and so have his federal appeals on all the issues that have come up so far. But you never know if a new one might not be filed late.
In other cases that we've heard of, some question of the evidence comes up, DNA typically in cases from years ago. Is innocence an issue at all?
Well, Stanley Williams has never admitted to having committed the murders that he was convicted of. In his clemency petition, he maintains his innocence. The district attorney's office in Los Angeles says the evidence against him is overwhelming. So that's where it stands. I doubt that the governor is going to entertain much here in regards to his innocence or not. But in any event, Stanley Williams still maintains that he's innocent.
Mm-hmm. He has become a celebrity of sorts. A TV movie was made about his life after he seemingly changed in prison.
Well, after many years in prison where he was kind of a bad actor, to say the least, he, in 1994, claims that he experienced some sort of redemption, and over the last 11 years he's written some books that that purport to keep kids out of gangs. He's renounced his gang life, but he is not admitted any responsibility for these murders.
Mm-hmm. What is Governor Schwarzenegger's record on implementing the death penalty?
Well, there have been two cases that have come to him. One guy named Kevin Cooper, who was convicted of killing a family in Chino in 1983. The governor in that case did not grant him a hearing. He did a paper review of the Cooper case and decided to not grant him a hearing, not send the case to the board of what was in the board of prison terms, and allowed the case to proceed toward execution. However, there were some evidentiary matters came up in the federal courts that are now being heard, and it was Mr. Cooper got a stay, and the U.S. Supreme Court allowed that stay to stand. But the governor in that case was prepared to allow that case to go to execution. There was another one involving a guy named Donald Beardsley, who was accused of or was convicted of murdering some people in the Bay Area. In that case, the governor allowed or called for a Board of Prison Terms hearing for Mr. Beardsley. And in that matter, the Board of Prison Terms issues a recommendation that generally is about a sentence or so. Their recommendation in that case was to allow the execution to proceed, and the governor did allow that execution to proceed, and Mr. Beardsley was executed.
Mm-hmm. What about the family of the victims? Have they weighed in on this at all?
Yeah, they have. They are very much one of they're the brother of one of the victims in this case I spoke to, and he was very much opposed to the governor even granting this hearing that he's going to be presiding over on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. And the other issue, I guess, is this hearing that's going to be held on Thursday seems exceptional. Have there been suggestions that the celebrity surrounding Mr. Williams, is that the reason the governor's going to these extraordinary lengths?
I haven't heard that, and I would doubt it, but I don't really know.
Mm-hmm. Governor Schwarzenegger is also running for re-election. Is that considered to be a factor at all?
Well, not that I know of. Politics, I'm sure, is always around, but I don't think that's going to affect him on this one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Andy Ferrillo, thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Andy Ferrillo, a reporter for the Sacramento Bee. He joins us from the Sacramento Bureau of our member station in San Francisco, KQED. For a first-hand account of a governor's deliberation to whether or not grant clemency, we turn now to Phil Batt, a Republican who served as governor of Idaho from 1995 to 1999, and he's with us from his home in Boise, and it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation, Governor.
Thank you, sir.
In 1996, you commuted the sentence of a man who was sentenced to death by hanging in 1981 for a double murder. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, all I did was agree with the parole board's recommendation that his sentence be commuted from death penalty to life without parole. However, I had the authority to go ahead and have him executed, and I took it very seriously. And I canceled all my appointments for a week and had the various people involved come in and give me their view of the crime.
So a hearing of the type that Governor Schwarzenegger is holding this week, that you don't think is extraordinary at all?
No, I don't. It's a very serious matter, as we all know, and when a life hangs in the balance, you do everything you can to get at the truth, and that's what I did, and I became convinced there was some doubt as to his guilt, and I went along with the parole board's recommendation.
Mr. Paradis was the alleged killer involved, the convicted killer involved, was later cleared of all wrongdoing and found to have been innocent.
Well, he wasn't cleared of all wrongdoing. He was convicted of obstructing justice by the disposal of the body in Idaho. The crime was committed in Spokane, they finally determined.
Yes, but he was cleared of the murder.
That's correct.
I wonder, given the fact that he was later cleared, I guess all that agonizing was worth it.
Yes, it was. I feel quite vindicated in my judgment. There was some question in my mind at the time, and I went with the presumption of innocence, and I'm glad I did.
Mm-hmm. Were there other cases where you were faced with this same decision?
No, that was the only one that we had to work on. We have a parole board, which we turn those matters over to, and that's the only one that came before me.
Mm-hmm. And given the fact that there were the primary area of inquiry in this case was innocence or guilt and questions about the evidence, and I guess his attorneys had developed an argument saying, look, we have eyewitnesses and other evidence to suggest he's not the guy who committed this murder. That was the main thing that you were talking about. Other factors did you consider?
No. He maintained all along that all he did was help dispose of the body in Idaho, and that's what he finally was convicted of, and the time he'd already served took care of that. But that was the big question as to whether she was killed in Idaho or whether it occurred in Spokane. I think they finally determined from some forensic evidence afterward that it was in Spokane indeed.
There must have been some, those nights that must have been long.
I'm sorry?
Those nights when you were considering this decision, they must have been long nights.
Oh, I sleep pretty well in it. I did spend all my waking hours working on it for about a week there, and I thought I was doing what I needed to do.
Are you, in general, an opponent or proponent of the death penalty?
Oh, I believe in certain cases it should be carried out.
And did this case give you any cause to reconsider that?
No, I think it should be very carefully administered, and I have some misgivings about the way it's done. It seems to be quite unevenly applied throughout the country, but I think in certain grievous, heinous crimes that it should be carried out.
Yeah, geographic application has certainly been an issue in other cases.
Well, that, racial and poverty as opposed to wealth, and, you know, it's pretty uneven. So I think it should be done only in the most extreme and positive circumstances.
Mm-hmm. It was Attorney General Ashcroft, who was, of course, thinking about this on the federal level, was saying, look, if we're going to apply the death penalty in Texas or in Virginia, we ought to have the same standards as we do in New England, which, of course, upset some people in New England. But I wonder, is that the kind of thing that you were talking about?
Well, yes, I agree that you shouldn't be more at risk in one area of the country than another, or a different race than another, or your means of livelihood in another. It should be the same throughout these United States.
Well, Governor Batt, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate your talking with us.
Thank you.
Phil Batt served as governor of Idaho from 1995 to 1999. He joined us by telephone from his home in Boise. What factors do you think a governor should consider? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We're turning now to another governor who faced this decision. Paris Glendening is the former governor of Maryland, a Democrat, who served from 1995 to 2003, and he joins us now from his office in Annapolis, Maryland. Governor, nice of you to be with us.
Thank you very much.
You faced this question several times when you were governor. Can you tell us about the process, the kinds of things that you weighed?
Well, let me just first tell you, it's obviously a very, very difficult decision. And it's also one that, in many cases, you don't ponder that much before it is, if you will, literally laid on your desk.
Mm-hmm.
I say it that way. You know, very few people actually run for office on the basis of their position on the death penalty or whatever. And my major thrust was about education and the environment, and it was something that I knew as one of my constitutional duties, but not anything that I had gone into great, great thought about. And as it came about, there were three executions presented to me, two of which we did follow through with the execution, and one of which we commuted. The factors, I think, are probably a little different in each case, but the bottom line that became very, very clear to me as I went through this agonizing process was that there have to be two really ironclad rules. One is, are we absolutely certain of guilt? No error or possibility for error whatsoever. And let me just say on that one, increasingly across the country, I think the public's faith, I know my faith, has been shaken that what may seem ironclad is in fact ironclad.
Mm-hmm.
We know there were 14 people in recent years released from death row based on clear DNA evidence that said they didn't do it. Also, by the way, if 14 were released based on this evidence, it seems pretty certain to me that there were innocent people executed prior to this before we had the knowledge of DNA the way we do today.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, the facts of the case, we've got to be absolutely certain that there's no bias in the system whatsoever, no racial bias, no procedural bias, or anything of this type. Now, as you're probably aware, just yesterday, Maryland did execute another individual. And while my great sympathy goes out for the family, because this was a horrendous crime,
mm-hmm.
difficult for any governor, including the incumbent governor, to go through this. I am not at all sure that this case didn't run head-on into the second issue of being no bias. After numerous charges of racial and geographic bias in our system, I commissioned a study back in, I think it was 2002, and that study, among other things, found that the majority of the death sentences in Maryland were when a black male killed a white person in Baltimore County. I understand Baltimore County is not a high crime area, and I understand also most of the homicides are actually black on black, and yet if you fall into this pattern of a black who killed a white in Baltimore County, chances are you're going to be executed. Well, this gentleman who was just killed fell exactly into that pattern. Now, that doesn't mean that he didn't commit the crime, and it doesn't mean that there's any less just terrible, terrible sympathy for the victim and her family and her grandchildren who were there at the time of the killing.
Yes.
But it does suggest that something is wrong in this whole system.
And
I think this is part of the problem, if I could just say, by the way, that across the country, I'm finding more and more people just saying, you know, we ought to pause. We ought to think about what we're doing here. Are we so clear on guilt? Are we so positive the system has no biases in it? And maybe should we be doing this at all?
At one point, you did say that these questions of bias would be mitigated since you, as governor, were reviewing the facts of every single case. And indeed, you did go ahead with an execution.
Yes. When you say went ahead with the first two.
Yeah.
Yes. It was my thought that would be sufficient to do it, to look and say, was this clear evidence and was there any hint of discrimination or anything of that type? At that time, we were not aware of this pattern that the study that we requested so clearly brought out. What happened was a number of people throughout the state asked that we do an objective study, which on the potential for some type of systemic or racial discrimination in the process. We did so, and it was when it became clear to me what the nature of the problem was that I put a moratorium on all executions and recommended that we proceed with some type of corrections on the system or reconsider the whole question of the death penalty.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Again, 800-989-8255. Amy joins us on the line from San Mateo in California.
Hi. You know, I have to say that that I find, you know, the conversation that you're having incredibly valuable. I have to say, if I was in the position as a governor to have to review one of these cases, one of the factors that I would have to weigh very heavily is how compelling the evidence is. Because, you know, they just did a program on Forum this morning about a number of death penalty convictions that have been overturned on more compelling DNA evidence in most cases. And it seems to me that we have to be very careful to only proceed in those cases where the evidence is clear enough that there hasn't been a mistake. Because otherwise we erode confidence in the system, and it seems like too stiff a penalty.
Let me just say, I agree with what you're saying. And in fact, on the case that I did commute to life in prison, it was not just absolutely clear to me that the person had committed the crime. Likely, yes, even probable, but it wasn't absolutely clear, and that is why I commuted to life in prison. Likewise, in Virginia, Governor Mark Warner, with a great deal of courage, by the way, just 2 days ago, 3 days ago, did exactly the same thing and said that it just wasn't clear line that we could say with absolute certainty that this person committed the crime. In this particular case, so that there's the most recent case, or let me just go back for a second and say, those 14 people who were on death row, presumably in each of the different states where this took place, the same questions have been asked. Is this absolutely certain? It was asked by the judge. It was asked by the prosecutors. It was asked by the appeals courts. It was asked right up to the point, I suppose, of the governor. And in each case, the evidence seemed to suggest, yes, with certainty, this is what happened. And now we know, in 14 cases, with certainty, it did not happen. And so that's part of the reason I say, even though we demand this clear standard, if we're going to have a system of execution, we must have it based on confidence that this crime was committed. And yet clearly in the past, that confidence was not, valid.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is one of the reasons I think a lot of people are now saying, you know, the execution is a final decision that can't be brought back if witnesses later recant, mm-hmm. or if we find some terrible mistake, or we find DNA evidence or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
You can always let a person out of prison and say, I'm sorry you were there for 25 years. Well, we made a mistake, but you can't bring a person back.
Amy, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Governor, you were governor of Maryland during the sniper cases, several of which happened in the state of Maryland. And the cases being went first, I think, to the state of Virginia, I think in part because of the moratorium on the death penalty then in effect in Maryland.
I believe that was part of the thinking for the first assignment of the case.
And did that give you pause at all? I mean, that's a case of such notoriety. And again, a case, it's easy to say from this vantage point, but the guilt or innocence doesn't seem to be a factor.
No, it really didn't give me that much pause. I thought of some of the implications of that. I mean, what was clearly being done was to shop around a little bit to make what is the best chance of getting the death penalty. But I think the two fundamental standards ought to be there no matter what. Is this individual absolutely with certainty guilty? And since the trial going, I wouldn't try to prejudge that, but we've all read the newspapers and all.
Sure.
And then secondly, is there a bias in the system?
Mm.
And I think that those ought to be our standards no matter where we are.
Let's get another caller in. Jason calling from Boston, Massachusetts.
This might sound cynical, but I really believe that party politics plays an essential role in the decision the governor makes. I really believe that the thought process is politically motivated. Does Schwarzenegger or his party really want to see the specter of a political smear ad in his future in the way that Willie Horton affected Michael Dukakis?
Well, he would not be releasing, as I understand it, Stanley Williams. He would be commuting his sentence to life without the possibility of parole.
Well, right, but I mean, you know, standing up for the leader of a known and notorious criminal gang certainly cannot bode well for him or his party in any future political aspirations, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. It does have some elements, Governor Glendening, that also bring into case the Carla Faye Tucker, the woman who was executed in Texas after she changed her life in prison and became a campaigner for prisoners and for bringing Christ into their lives.
Right. Particularly with regard, I guess, to the caller's question here about the partisan mm-hmm. politics might be involved in it, or particularly politics if someone's looking to the future. I understand in the past, certainly Willie Horton's probably the most notorious example, these type of decisions have subsequent political implications. And I know, for just as an illustration, when Governor Warner, a very thoughtful, strong leader in Virginia, made the decision to commute that, there was pressure on him not to do so because, quote, as some of the press said, it might hurt his future possibilities as presidential candidate. I would hope of all of the factors or thoughts that go into this process that is the least likely to occur and the least probable. And I say it that way because I know many, many petitions and calls and visits and everything where people tried to put pressure on me, and I know as chairman of the former governors, the same thing is true.
The Pope
doesn't break into it.
The Pope intervened and called for clemency in one of the cases that you had to decide.
That's exactly right. And in the most recent one here in Maryland, the cardinal actually visited the person on death row and then asked for clemency as well. But those are not the politics of it are there. But I can tell you, from every person I know who's ever been involved in this, I have not seen anyone as governor directly responding or even being greatly influenced by the political thing. I don't think Mr. Schwarzenegger will be. I don't think Mr. Warner in Virginia was. You do it. It's just a tough decision. You feel very isolated and alone at that time. But you make your decision. You do what you think is best. The only thing that I can say in terms of putting this in a real perspective, from when I started as governor, which was in 1995, and then served the two terms of term limitation in 2003, so much changed in the national dialogue about what was going on here. When I say so much, the clear DNA evidence releasing people, a number of high visibility cases of people who either changed their life while in prison or of people who were in for major other charges and now found to be innocent. And then in Maryland and several other studies, the study of racial or geographic bias and or some other type of bias that I think increasingly people are saying, if you're going to have a death penalty, it's got to be based on certainty and what the events of the last 4 or 5 years have shown us is not certain at all.
Jason, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And we're talking with Paris Glendening, the former governor of Maryland, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Governor, in some cases, families of victims have been waiting 5, 10, 15 years for what they consider justice to be carried out. What do you tell them when you commute the sentence?
Well, obviously, it's very difficult in any circumstance and was there as well. And in the case when I did commute, I indicated that, again, a great deal of sympathy, regardless of whether the person was guilty or not, the family had suffered that loss and that pain. And so a great deal of empathy and concern and sympathy. But their pain could not put the state in a position of saying we're going to execute, even though there's even a possibility of a mistake being made here. And that's basically what I said. But let me also tell you that when I've talked with either families or representatives of families of victims, of people who've been brutally killed here, the word that I hear most often is not justice or even revenge or anything of this type. The word I hear most often is closure. They want closure. Now, what has happened, unfortunately, is that in this country, and in part because there is a recognition we could be making a mistake or system could be biased, but the actual implementation of the death penalty, that is, of killing someone, takes all across the country at least a decade, and very, very commonly 15 years, 20 years. And the pain and the agony that victim's family goes through all this time because there's no closure. There is, I think, some merit to an argument that if found guilty, a person be sentenced to life in prison without any possibility of parole whatsoever. And at that date, then, at least for the victim's family, this has been brought to closure. It is the constant appeals and the publicity about it and rehashing of the evidence and so on that goes on for a decade and a half, that I think that keeps so many of the victim's family in just absolute agony. This execution that just occurred in Maryland yesterday, the crime itself was committed in 1991.
And that's a long time.
And for this poor family.
Governor Glendening, I'm afraid our time restrictions are much more concrete. We're running out of it. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Paris Glendening, a Democrat, former governor of Maryland.